Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, what's up, and welcome to Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast brought to you by King's Comics in Sydney. My name is Levins, Andrew Levins at that. My co-host name is Siobhan Coombs.
Hello.
And every week we read a rapidly increasing list of comic book issues and let you know which are the issues that are worth your time.
And every comic book we talk about today can be picked up at King's Comics at 310 Pitt Street, Sydney, or at kingscomics.com.
This week, we read a new series by Matt Kint, Superman Got Naked in Space.
Hell yeah.
And we also had the privilege of reading a Captain America comic that felt like it was written by a 200-year-old robot who'd never read a comic before. But we're going to kick things off like we do every week by reviewing all of the brand new number one issues in our opening segment. First things first. Later on in the episode, we're going to be reviewing the rest of the comics that came out this week. And Siobhan is going to let you know some cool info about Free Comic Book Day at King's and I guess everywhere.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Super exciting. Comic Book Christmas.
Yep, sure.
Is that what they call it in the biz?
I don't know. I feel like Nerd Christmas has come to mean so many things. Like, San Diego Comic Con is Nerd Christmas. Free Comic Book Day is Nerd Christmas.
Or it's like, yeah, a new episode of, like, you know,
Daredevil. Nerd Christmas. Yay. We have a lot of Christmases.
But yeah, Free Comic Book Day is coming up rapidly fast, so we'll be giving you some very important details later on in the show. Let's go. First things first, we had less number ones than last week, but still a pretty good amount of them.
Yeah, pretty significant amount.
We're going to want to kick things off with a one-shot, not really a first issue, but probably the comic that I was most excited to read this week. One of my favorite series is Criminal by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, and they've written... I feel like that there are about four or five. I've got them up on my shelf just there. Six different trades worth of criminal stories, and what they are like they're vaguely related. A few of them are completely separate, but it's this ongoing kind of crime tragedy. Just meet all these tragic figures that are all tied together through, you know, either parents in crime or that they're criminals themselves. And so there are a few, I guess, anthologies of these stories that that have been collected so far. They haven't put out a criminal edition since an amazing parody they did of Archie.
Oh, what?
Which
you
would love.
Read it.
Yeah, I know. I might send you home with it, actually, because you can read that on its own. Since putting out that collection, they haven't really done a new story, but we have gotten two specials, one last year, and then we got one this year, too. So this is the Criminal 10th Anniversary Special, colored by Elizabeth Brett Weiser. And it was just an unbelievable...
Such a good standalone issue. And I haven't read any of the Criminal books, which is very weird because I love Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. I loved being able to just pick this up and enjoy the story from start to finish without, like, any confusion about what was going on, who anyone was. And it was really brilliant. Really brilliant issue.
Yeah, so there are characters in this story that have appeared in Criminal stories before.
Okay.
But it's not important.
Yeah.
This special and the special before it used a motif that they haven't done beforehand of having the characters within it read an old comic book.
And I loved that. I loved the main story is interspersed with this awesome sort of 70s style kung fu story
about a werewolf,
which feels very like 70s Marvel, which is really really good fun. Like,
who's
really
in love
excellent.
With his best friend's girlfriend.
Yeah.
and yeah, so yeah, you cut kind of from a very, like, you know, real you know, Sean Phillips is my favorite comic book artist, and just
he does draw creepy children though.
Yeah,
like he's one of those guys. Like I feel like Gary Frank has the same thing, that when they're amazing, but then when they draw little kids, there's something slightly off. Like that little girl,
yeah,
a little bit weird.
So we get this, you know, it's set in the '70s. You get this tragic story of the son of a criminal.
Can I ask something? Because I may have misinterpreted this, but I thought in that they were sort of alluding to the fact that it was actually a little girl and that she'd cut her hair short. Maybe I misread that completely. And that's something that I made up in my head, but I thought that was a thing.
He's definitely a boy.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Where did you get alluded to that?
I don't know. I'll have to reread it and see where I thought that was from.
He is given a comic that his dad steals from a service station attendant, and the comic is this goofy kung fu thing, and he wants to find more. So, you know, it's grim when you read, pretty much all of Ed Brubaker's comics are grim in that you know that, you know, nothing good is going to happen to the main characters.
Yeah.
But this is, on the big scale of things, like some truly horrible things happen in this book, but on the big scale of things, this is actually like a nice introduction to the criminal universe.
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't as bleak as you could have expected it to be.
And I loved it, like, you know, while his dad, you don't really see the crimes being committed for the most part. It's all about what his son does when his dad leaves him for 3 days to go sort something out for his boss. And the kid tries to find other issues of this comic that he's been given, and meets a little girl, and, you know, has to, for the first time ever, has a friend. And realizes that, you know, he has to say goodbye to, he has to be a ghost, basically, or else he could affect his dad's work, and anyone that affects his dad's work ends up in a grave.
Yeah. So it was reasonably grim, but really lovely, really beautiful story. And it was also cool because they released two different editions.
Yes.
They released an oversized magazine format, which I always love.
Yeah, I was so bummed because when they did the last special, I missed it.
Oh, yeah.
But I got this one, and it's such a great way to read it. It just looks so incredible. Off the bat, if you are interested in crime comics or you never read one and you want to read a really great one straight away, pick up this issue if you see it. It's an oversized issue. It's a little bit more expensive than a regular comic, but you just breeze through it. It's an incredible, just a great story.
And it's hard to find as, like, just really good standalone single issue comic book to, like, just go into a comic book store and not knowing anything and just go like, yep, that's something I can pick up and really enjoy. So if you're new to comics, it's a really cool single issue to have in your collection.
Yeah, a great gift for someone too that might not necessarily be into comics yet.
Yeah, absolutely.
A really great bridge to both comics and the work of Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, who are just the best. Every time they do anything, it's worth reading.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's move on to a little, like, he's like a sleeper hit, this guy. Matt Kent, a writer who's done a few creator-owned projects at Dark Horse. He's also written a bunch of Marvel comics over the years, some DC stuff as well.
Yep.
But he, you know, hasn't really had much mainstream success yet.
No, I mean, he's got, he has real sort of, like, people, if you love his comics, you, like, love his comics. And so people rave about Mind Management, which is his longest running series for Dark Horse, which I think is finished now.
That's right. Finished last year.
But people are obsessed with that. I haven't read it, and I probably know him most through his superhero work. But he's definitely a really interesting writer-artist.
Yeah. He's very similar to Jeff Lemire in that they have, like, very rough style of cartooning when they draw their own comics. But it's, you know, once you read one issue, you're hooked to their style. And in fact, Matt Kent actually filled in for a few issues of Jeff Lemire's long-running Vertigo title, Sweet Tooth.
Oh, he did,
He drew some issues of that. Mind Management was a very high concept, incredible kind of spanning over generations, a long tail of, secret organizations and stuff like that. This is a much more grounded book. It's called Department H, or DEPT.H.
He loves a truncated title.
He does. He's written and drawn it, but then the art has been painted by his wife, Charlene Kent.
Which is beautiful, and I have to say.
Yeah, because he does a lot of watercolor work, and apparently his wife, Charlene, taught him how to do watercoloring, which is why this is like a next level beautiful. And just even the paper that this is printed on is just incredible. It's a really, a lot of care has gone into this book. And, you know, it's just so great that you have publishers that allow a book to be this beautiful.
Especially single issues. I mean, when so many publishers seem to, you know, be really not putting money behind the single issue and really pushing trade paperback format. It's really nice to get like a really beautifully put together single, I think.
Yeah, like the Marvel covers at the moment are like as thin as toilet paper.
Yeah, absolutely. And you could probably use them.
No, that's a terrible thing. It's the worst thing you've ever said.
I'm so sorry.
So Department H is a murder mystery set. It's about a woman who goes to a laboratory under the sea that her father has been working on for all of her life, and he has been murdered. And the murder scene is intact. It's just completely filled with water. So she goes down there. You meet the cast. Kind of sets up the story. And then the last, you know, she sees her father's body. And she's gone down there to solve the murder, basically. And the last page is all of the characters and kind of almost like a... What was it? Cluedo?
Yeah.
Where it kind of tells you all the names and, you know, their backgrounds or, like, you know, just like a little one-liner about what they do and that they're all the suspects and she's going to find out who it is.
Yeah, I really love that they set this up. Like, even early on in the issue, someone says, like, this is a locked room mystery. You can't, like, the murderer is down there. There's no positive result for this. And I like that they set this up early on as, like, this is what we're doing. This is a straightforward...
Yeah.
Locked room, murder mystery. You can look for clues. You can follow it with us. But, like, there is going to be a satisfying ending to this.
Absolutely. And so, this comic is going to... Every issue is going to follow one day of this character's life trying to figure out the who murdered her father. Matt Kent is incredible at characters as well as big sprawling stories. Mm-hmm. So, I'm looking forward to there being some, you know, pretty emotional moments in this story, obviously.
Absolutely. And he also always does something interesting in terms of, like, the page layout or something like that. Like, he finds new and interesting ways to tell stories in the format. And, like, up the side of each page, there's sort of a measure of how deep she's going in the water. And you kind of have to assume that at the moment it's only very shallow. You sort of have to assume that in the end it's going to... Things are going to get deep.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm very excited about this book. It was a stunning first issue in that it kind of, you know, just kind of sets the scene, doesn't do anything too crazy.
Yeah.
It's just like really, really well reserved. It's just setting up a really amazing story.
Absolutely. Loved it.
Let's move from two fantastic number ones to the, like, this is definitely worse than Harley Quinn and a game of Harleys.
Yeah,
no,
it is.
But I think it knows it's bad.
And so, also, I mean, this is really comics that are based or comic, it is sad, but comics that are sort of based on or involved in or like prequels or sequels to established films in the like Marvel or DC universe are almost always like fairly trash.
Yeah. So in the lead up to every, obviously we've got Captain America 3 Civil War coming out this week, actually. Very excited about it. But in a lead up to all of their movies, Marvel will always put out a comic book that is kind of like almost like a little primer set up to their movies, and it's set in the movie universe, and they're always just absolute shit. And this did not decide to stray from that path.
No, this was pretty shit.
So you basically, if you remember at the end of Age of Ultron, they've got new Avengers now. So Captain America and Black Widow lead a team of Scarlet Witch, the Falcon, the Vision, and War Machine. And Cap is not sure if they're ready to do proper Avengery stuff yet, but then they get a chance to work together as a team and assemble to take down someone that is... basically used all of the Ultron sentries to make a big metal.
So like, I mean, giant. Like, very boring.
Really, really boring. No good character moments. The dialogue is not like the movie versions or like the comic book versions.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most exceptional thing about this comic is that, like, in terms of physical representation, tone of voice, anything, it in no way reflects the movie or film versions of the characters in any sense.
Yeah. To give you an example of this, here is the inside of Steve's mind. This is how the comic book closes. This thing may have been formidable, but now it's just another piece of Ultron trash that's being cleaned up. We were able to contain the damage, which is the most important thing. As far as the new Avengers, I can rest assured that this team is truly greater than the sum of its parts. The end.
Wrapped up nicely. Good job, Cap.
Yeah.
The only thing that I think is the thing that I enjoyed in this issue is there's one page drawn by someone, DeVito. I don't even know who that is. Danny DeVito, we have to assume. Of the
Andrea
Vision.
Andrea
the Vision, phasing out of a building to chase a butterfly.
I didn't notice that.
To chase a butterfly with his hand. He's trying to touch the butterfly. Well, but the thing I find most interesting is that she seems to have drawn the vision with a distinct package.
Oh, wow.
When that's something that I really hope that they cover in Civil War.
Or not cover.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, did Tony Stark... Is he that arrogant that he's like, no, my robot needs to have a penis?
Yeah, he's well endowed.
And I hope that they and I hope that they cover that and his relationship with Scarlet.
Captain America 1, Road to War. Do not get it.
Don't get it. Don't do it. It's fine.
Real bummer.
Yeah.
I'll move on to another bummer. This one is Boom Studios. I got very excited because obviously Boom Studios put out our favorite number one of last week, Goldie Vance.
Oh, yeah.
And I really like Marcus Toe. Who did the art on this one? This one, the book is called Joyride, written by Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly. And it is a like a teenage space adventure comic that it's a four-part series, a little mini series, and it is, you know, it's a cute story, but with infuriatingly bad dialogue.
Right.
And just like kids not sounding like kids at all, which really pulls you out. Whenever a writer tries to write young people and it just sounds like...
an old person trying to write young people.
Exactly. Nothing pulls you away from a story. And see, especially
that's
when
what
you
Kieran Gillen
that.
Does for me. That's why I really didn't enjoy their Young Avengers run, because I just thought it was so like, tweet me about it.
Right.
You know?
Put it on Tumblr.
But I think that this is very much aimed at that kind of audience. So if you really liked Young Avengers or if you really liked Runaways, it could be worth checking out. But I don't think it's like breaking any new ground.
The characters are really cool. It's set in like future Earth. And there are so many, they don't use coins. They use bits. Like, and it's just like really, really lame, you know, words to replace other words. At one point, they're like, oh, bits are like blobs to them. Like, that's pretty much a line of dialogue. I don't know, just so lazy. but the art's fantastic. You've got two kids trying to escape this their boring, mundane future life. They want to go exploring other planets. So they try to, escape using a pod from the... I don't know, the government space program, and then they're followed by someone who's a similar age to them, another girl who works for the program, and she wants to bring them back in, but they want to continue adventuring, and an adventure begins. It gets a lot better as the story continues. So I was happy that I slugged through it, and I'll probably read number two, but
but not an incredible first issue.
Not a great start to Joyride on Boom.
One that I picked up. Also by Matt Kint, which was an excellent first issue, I thought, is Divinity 2, issue 1. So this is written, as I said, by Matt Kint with art by Trevor Hairsin.
And this is out on Valiant Comics, who we sung the praises of last week on the show. And I wanted to pick this one up a bit because it is called Divinity 2, right?
Yeah.
It's a sequel to an event they did last year.
Yeah, and which I didn't read. So I was like, will I understand what's going on? And so basically the concept behind Divinity was that during the height of the Cold War, the Soviet Union sent 3 cosmonauts into space. They land on like some crazy tripped out planet, and one of the spacemen takes his helmet off and breathes in these alien spores or something and becomes Divinity. He comes back down to Earth. Now, I didn't read that. Apparently, it gives him the unknown, changed him, and gave him the ability to bend matter, space, and even time to his will. So now we're like, okay, that was a cool story, but what happened to the other cosmonauts? And so now you get the backstory behind the female cosmonaut whose name is Mishka, or she's called Mishka, which means little mouse. Mm-hmm. And she is a homeless...
One of 5 names that a female Russian character is called.
Yep, absolutely. What's a Russian name? That'll do. Her name is Valentina Volkov, sorry. All right. So she's the first woman in space. And so she gets out on... the story... starts off with her homeless on the streets, cold, cold streets of Russia, and she's picked up by a scientist as she's about to start eating a dead rat. And he's like, oh, you're so tough, come with me, and starts training her up to be a space person. And she's very, like, she's much more committed to the Soviet dream and to Russia than Divinity, apparently. So it sort of tells her backstory, and then she takes off her helmet as well and gains the powers. And as she's coming back to Earth, she sees the collapse of the Soviet Union and becomes increasingly distressed. And so when she lands, she goes straight to Putin's office to be like, what can I do? And it's really funny because Putin's like, we've been waiting for you. Thank you for your help. Like, that's the last page.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It really looks like Putin.
Yeah, it really, it's a great likeness for Putin. Really excellent first issue. I really enjoyed it. I think that it's a really compelling story. I love that even though I haven't read Divinity 1, you can still jump in and pick this up. I think it's a great first issue. And I think it puts you in the middle of a universe that's really interesting.
Amazing.
So I would really highly recommend that.
Yeah, sick. Great.
If you're looking for a way into the Valiant universe, Divinity 2, issue 1.
Two big hits for Matt Kent this week. Yeah. Let's talk about two hits to two shits. These are two books that I will not be reading any further issues of. The first of which is The Twilight Zone, The Shadow, the coming together of two properties that I've never cared about before. So why would I care about them together? Look, this is not necessarily bad. It was, but it's also very much not for me. So even though there was an incredible Francesco Francavilla cover on not just this book.
He always sucks you in.
Yeah, the next book I'm about to complain about as well. He did cover art on both of these books.
So tricky, Francavilla.
Yeah.
When will you go back to doing interiors?
I know, right? Gosh.
Yeah.
Give us another Afterlife with Archie already.
Yeah, for Pete's sakes.
But yeah, the book did not get me at all.
So it's just a basic crossover between the sort of pulp character, The Shadow, and the Twilight Zone.
Well,
TV
it's the
series?
He enters the Twilight Zone, he's face to face with his alter ego. So the Shadow exists as its own person, and
is this a Dynamite comic?
Yes, Dynamite. Right. Yeah.
So Dynamite do a lot of these kind of pre-owned properties, and then they cross over into each other's universes. And whoa, it's crazy.
They're gonna make money somehow.
They're gonna make money, absolutely.
Aftershock is a fairly recent new comic book publisher. We talked about one of their books last week, which was called, what was the heist comic we read?
Oh, Jackpot.
Jackpot, which I quite liked. So I was hopeful about this one because I've been putting a lot of they're publicizing this one pretty heavily. It was only $1.99 American as well, too. So they're really, trying to make it get in as many hands as possible. Written by Guy Major and Marshall Dillon, this one is called B.E.K., The Black-Eyed Kids. Have you ever seen, Children of the Damned?
No, but I understand the basic concept of evil children.
So, yeah, this is like evil teens in the now. It was a real boring comic that just kind of ended. And I was just like, well, that was it? Oh, man. Yeah. Kids are evil, people die. Boring.
If you love evil kids, pick it up.
If you love Francesco Francavilla cover art and then a boring story afterwards, pick up Black Eyed Kids number 1. Let's move on to some more awesome issues. There was a lot of comics come out this week.
There's a lot of comics this week.
So let's look. Obviously, as we do every week, we've got a massive chunk of Marvel stuff, but maybe we'll try and focus on the non-Marvel properties first. I want to kick off with the only DC book I read this week, but it happened to be a fantastic book. In fact, I caught up in this entire mini-series, six issues of which only have come out so far, and the six came out this week. Superman American Alien by Max Landis and different artists on each issue. We've spoken about it in the past and pretty much every conversation about Superman, someone will bring up Frank Quitely and Mark Morrison did Return of the Mac. Someone will always bring up All-Star Superman by them. Yeah. It's like, ultimate Superman story. And where that is like, the go-to story for the end of Superman's life, I feel like this book, Superman American Alien, is going to become the go-to story for the beginning of Superman's life.
Ooh, big call.
But it's not an origin story. It's these little spotlight. Every issue is a different spotlight with a different artist on a point in Clark Kent, Superman. He hasn't really become Superman yet in some of these issues. Mm. So it's a point in Clark Kent's life where, just a little story, a little glimpse of where he's at the time. He starts off, obviously, in Smallville, and the first few issues are him coming to terms with his powers as a kid, and then you kind of see him as a teenager. At one point, he drunkenly impersonates Bruce Wayne at a party for him on a boat, which is a really fantastic issue. This time, he's become Superman, and Metropolis is very aware of Superman's his deeds. He's starting to become quite famous, and his logo is starting to go up everywhere. And obviously, Metropolis has coined the name Superman for him. But he gets a visit from two of his friends from Smallville, Pete Ross and someone else,
Kenny. Superman's best friend, Kenny.
And look, it's a very emotional story about even though their friend has superpowers, they grew up with Clark, and they worry about him whenever they see him on the news. Because they both know that Clark Kent is Superman. Mm. Even though that, you know, he's seemingly unstoppable, they still see him on the news every night, and they worry about him. At one point, they say it's like having a friend that's always at war in the army. And then it's just a great little story that sees Clark Kent kind of leave an argument with them and fly into space to figure out where, I guess, to kind of, you know, figure out where he's come from. And obviously, it's the thing that's, you know, in the back of his mind all the time. And he flies into space, and a little spoiler, he gets meat. After he flies into space and kind of loses the ability to breathe, I guess, he meets Abin Sur from the Green Lantern universe. He famously is the alien who gave Hal Jordan his powers.
And Tomare, the one with a head like a chicken.
Oh, I love that one. Great Lantern. They help him. Well, they don't do it intentionally, but he learns about where he's from through these guys. It's just a really fun story.
It's a very different take on the Clark Kent character.
Definitely.
Than I've ever seen before. It's a much more young, arrogant, relatable, I suppose, Clark Kent.
Mm-hmm.
He seems like a normal young man growing up, figuring out what to do with these powers, new in the big city, and his dorky friends come to visit from out of town. They don't understand. It looks like Jimmy Olsen is now black and potentially gay.
At least
I feel like that was being implied.
Very creative and arty.
Yes.
And very in touch with his inner self.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's good. But it's a very positive spin on Jimmy Olsen, especially after the last Jimmy Olsen I saw died in Batman v Superman with very, very few lines of dialogue.
I really am enjoying this series. There's something that I don't quite know. And I have a horrible feeling it's because I dislike the author Max Landis.
Yeah, well, he's a known douchebag.
Yeah, he is a well-known comics douchebag. And it's very hard sometimes to disconnect how good this book is from how irritating I find him. He recently said in an interview that he was larval stage Grant Morrison, which just really annoyed me.
Yeah,
just makes me not want to read anything he's ever written. But this is really good.
Wait, he said he was Marvel stage Grant.
No,
Morrison?
No, larval.
Larval,
as in he is just as good as Grant Morrison. He's going to be just as good as Grant Morrison in a couple of years.
He probably just said that to make Gerard Way cry.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it'd be hard to do.
The one weirdest moment I think is in that aforementioned really great issue where Clark pretends to be Bruce Wayne and gets drunk. Does he sleep with Barbara?
Ooh, you know what? I think that was the issue that I missed, and I don't know. Yeah, but it's implied that he and Lois are in an open relationship.
Yeah, that's right.
At the moment.
So on this issue where he pretends to be Bruce Wayne, which is a really, really fun issue. At one point, he meets a redhead girl, and they hit it off, and it's revealed that her name is Barbara, and nothing more than that. And at one point, he calls her Barbs, but they end up sleeping together.
Well, you have to assume so.
Yeah. Do you think about a world where Superman has slept with Batgirl?
I don't know. I feel like they're such different generations that I'm a little bit uncomfortable with it.
I think this exists in its own universe.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, look, there are a few awkward moments, but I think overall this is just a really, really fun comic.
And I think maybe that's my issue with it, is that it's such a male comic book. And that's not real... I mean, it should be, you know, it's about a young male Superman. But there's just something, I don't know, there's not really any female characters in it that I've seen so far that I've been like, oh yeah, that's cool. And it just seems a little bit not for me in some kind of weird, indefinable way.
I can totally understand that. Well, the issue's been drawn by Jonathan Case at the very
which
least.
Which is beautiful, beautiful, beautiful art.
Every issue of this has been incredible art by different artists and some of the best artists working at DC at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So. I would love to see Jonathan Case on a full regular Superman book
because
he does a square-jawed Clark Kent the way I like
favorite.
It.
And it again, ties to this is like the mark of any great DC artist. It's almost like a mix of like Kieran Gillen and Kieran Gillen, and
it's got sort of Chris Samney kind of vibe.
Yeah, exactly
I thought
exactly
like
I
from his
Chris
kind
Samney
of
from
Adventures of Superman.
Yeah,
work.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Loved it.
Mm.
Real good.
Onto a DC book, which is definitely, definitely for girls. I read the last issue of Batgirl this week. Uh-huh. So wrapping up, I assume is the last issue.
Written by a dude, though.
Written by a dude, but a very female-oriented book. So written by...
I was going to say, but a very female dude.
he seems in touch with his side. So it's the final issue of the Stuart Fletcher Tar Batgirl run, and it's just kind of a bit of a wrap-up. You know, like, they finally got the big bad, has revealed his plan to Barbara, and it's all very... He thought he deleted her memories, but she was ahead of him, so she still has her memories and that kind of stuff. And so she brings all of the Bat women together, so Black Canary, spoiler, Bluebird, and her operator, I think they're calling her now. I thought they were going to make her Oracle, but now she's Operator. And it's basically them going around Burnside trying to take down this guy who has been messing with Batgirl's life. And it was a really nice ending to the run.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting because at the end of it, they set it up like, now we've got, Barbara's got her new company set up. She's like a tech CEO, which seems to be the cool new thing in superhero comic books. Where did she get the capital to start that? I mean, her dad's a cop, for Christ's sakes. But so in her brand new Gotham Energy company, underground is the new Batgirl lair. And so it's implied that like now she's all set up and the team's ready to go. But the next Batgirl story arc sees her traveling around Asia, discovering herself. So it's always a little bit sort of, can be a little bit confusing, I think, for fans, like, this feels like both the end and the start of something, but we know that the next start is going to be something completely different.
It's not actually the last issue of this one either. There's a 51 coming out in which Barbara Gordon is at a crossroads in her life. Will new horizons beckon her away from her home in Burnside?
Ah, well, there we go. I guess we'll find out why she decides to leave then. The thing that was fun is that they sort of set this issue up as a bit of a, like almost like a video game. And so all of the different teams, all the different Bat girls have to go around taking down the various rogue, like Batgirl's rogues gallery, basically. Mm-hmm. And there's a nice cool page where it's like Corporal Punishment versus Operator. And that was quite fun. So I did enjoy it. It was a good fun issue. And I look forward to reading the actual last issue soon.
And also the creative team's new book at Image.
I'll definitely be picking that up. That looks really cool.
If you want to hear more about it, listen to our spotlight on the new Image books from episode 3 or 2, maybe 3. 3, with the drunk one.
Well, yeah.
I want to talk about a Warren Ellis book, the James Bond series, Vargo.
This has been sold out almost every single time I've gone to buy it, because so I'm very interested to hear about it.
It's insane how good this James Bond comic book is.
Warren Ellis, I think, is just like hitting it out of the park really consistently.
We're getting 4 Warren Ellis books a month at the moment. Or, I mean, on and off with his Image books. But he's got this James Bond book with Ian Masters on art. He's also got Karnak, which we'll be talking about later at Marvel. And then he's got 2 Image books. Trees, which is really, really great and strange. But, it's coming out sporadically at the moment, but it's a very cool book. But the best of what he's putting out at the moment is Injection, a new issue that comes out next week. So I'll talk at length about that. But that's with Declan Shalvey, who he did Moon Knight with last year. But yeah, it's just wild that we're getting this much Warren Ellis. Yeah. And for it to be of this, because I've written a stack of shit Warren Ellis books in the past.
But everything's really consistently good at the moment.
This is especially the James Bond, though. It shouldn't be this good. I mean, it's awesome that it is, and all comics should be good. But it's just, it's a dynamite property. So, they've got the James Bond license. And as we said earlier, all of their licensed properties aren't that great.
Yeah.
This is just done with such care. The art's great. The action is brutal. Like, it's... And James Bond swears and smokes and is, quite rude. And he's not really necessarily portrayed as a good person sometimes. Mm. And the job... His job is not portrayed as, that cool either. Like, it's brutal and he has to do some horrible things. And I feel like the movies don't really explore that part of James Bond. I mean, I haven't sat through any of the last 4 Bond movies or whatever, but I've seen plenty of ones before that. But, this is just a classic Bond tale, and very gritty but not in a forced way. It makes sense. You know, of course he would get in situations where he has to shoot his way out. And when you shoot people, it's not, you know, they don't fall over and that's the end. Like, you know, it's pretty awful. And this comic, you know, doesn't hold back. It can be quite confronting at times. And that might not be what you expect from a big Hollywood James Bond movie, but it's certainly what you're getting for these. And I think that's what I've never read any of the James Bond novels, but I think they were a lot colder than the movies are, obviously, because that's Hollywood, baby. But yeah, I can't sing the praises of James Bond, Vargo, highly enough. This is the sixth issue of it. It wrapped up the story really well and was maybe the coldest one so far. Like, you don't envy James Bond at any point. Like, he gets shot a bunch of times and has to kill so many people. And but then there's also, like, this brilliant dynamic between him and everyone else that he works for. It's like, you know, it's almost like an office drama. Like that Archer has, you know, the spy agency kind of office politics. You kind of get shades of that in this as well. And then there's some great jokes in it as well. So this the first part of this Vargo just wrapped up. So a trade will be coming out really soon. And if you like action stories or James Bond, please get it because it's fantastic. The next one starts I think next month. It's called Eidolon. Eidolon, and that's
will Ellis still be writing that?
Yeah, and oh, wow. same creative team. So Ian Masters, awesome. Who I can't sing the praises of highly enough, like he does just a great work on this issue, and especially like you know how some cartoonists just the way that some of them can't pace an action scene very well. The pacing in this is impeccable, like. And maybe, you know, that's Warren Ellis and he does a really great descriptive job of what needs to be drawn. But Ian Masters does a fantastic job of portraying, like, you know, it's a lot of set pieces. There are lots of pages without dialogue at all. So it's entirely on him to, you know, explain what James Bond is doing and, you know, the tough situations that he's getting in. And he does it every time. Really, really great.
Yeah, awesome. I'll definitely be checking that one out in trade.
And finally, another image book. Sorry, the first image book of today is the 25th issue of East of West. Jonathan Hickman and Nick Dragotta's long, like a sci-fi western epic. This is one of the strangest books to kind of recommend to anyone unless they are prepared to read it from the very beginning, and also reread issues every now and then as well because it does get quite hard to follow month to month. But this is just a little short little review. It's still a really great story. Like a new issue comes out, and I'm never like, oh, great, a new East of West. Mm. It's always like towards the bottom of my pile, but it's always good.
I think that Hickman is definitely one of those writers who works much better in the sort of graphic novel format. So East of West, I read the first couple of issues and then I dropped because it just doesn't seem like a good one to read monthly. But when it's all done and I can sit there and read it all in one go and get a proper idea of what Hickman's trying to say, then I think it'll be a really worthwhile read. And the art is really, really lovely.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just said how great it is to get four Warren Ellis books regularly.
Mm.
And it's strange after having so much of his Marvel stuff out, you know, and we were getting like almost four issues of his Avengers stuff a month and then the events and all that kind of stuff and Secret Wars being so great. Where, you know, for this to be pretty much the only Hickman book that I'm reading at the moment because Dying and the Dead is very, very sporadic when it comes out and his new one for Image doesn't come out for a while yet. So it's a bit sad that this is the only Hickman book I'm reading at the moment, but it's a good one. Highly recommend picking up the trades of this book if you want to get into a really, really huge, epic, spanning story.
Mm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So are we ready to talk Marvel?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, should we start with... Because I'm talking... We both have a stack of, like, 12-ish Marvel books that we read this week.
It's too many.
And I want to give a shout-out to everyone at Marvel, especially Lynn. Not Marvel. Everyone at King's Comics, especially Lynn, for just constantly adding more books to my pile.
Lynn reads the most comics of, like, any human ever. Every time I'm like, oh, have you read this? She's like, oh, my God, yes, it's my favorite thing ever. What?
So she made me catch up on Uncanny Avengers Sorry, not Uncanny Avengers, Uncanny Inhumans. Mm. Everyone's fucking uncanny now.
Yeah, everyone's either all new or uncanny, and it's very confusing.
All new, all uncanny Inhumans. And I could not believe how much I loved that, but we'll talk about that later. Mm. Let's talk about Standoff, which is the kind of mini event taking place across the Avengers and Captain America books at the moment. 2 weeks ago, we had Captain America issue 7, in which Steve Rogers got his super serum powers back.
Finally.
Thanks to the Cosmic Cube. And this book is not much happens beyond that. It's just kind of, you know, I don't know. Do you want to describe this?
We're talking about Captain America.
Yeah, Captain America.
I feel like the main thing that came out of this was the scene where Steve says, "No, I still want you to be Captain America," to Sam Wilson's Falcon cap.
Yep.
Which is nice because I think that's probably something that people were concerned about with new Cap coming back, because I really like Falcon, Captain America.
Yeah, but I also like Falcon.
Yeah, I also like him as Falcon. But now he's got a new sidekick, a new Falcon sidekick.
That's true.
So,
I love it. At one point he says, like, "Oh, God damn it, I just appointed someone Falcon.
Yeah, yeah.
What am I going to do?" So we're going to have two Captain Americas now. And of course,
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So you've got the third Captain America, Bucky Barnes. Just as
Nick Spencer writes a sassy Bucky.
Yeah. The sassy Bucky, he should be sassy. He should be attitude and, you know.
He should either be like a crushed shell of a man or a sassy sidekick like Nightwing.
I mean, obviously, this is just kind of all lending, leading up to the final Standoff issue, Omega issue of it, Assault on Pleasant Hill, which has been pretty fun event so far. But yeah, not much happens in this issue.
Probably, actually, I've changed my mind because the best bit for me was... So the bad guys are trying to track down Kobik, the little girl, Cosmic mm-hmm. Cube shard. And so they enlist the greatest hunter of them all, Kraven.
That's right. That was
who
cool.
has the best outfits of all time. And he goes, you know how we catch a little girl? With bait. And so he sets up a birthday party and puts on a little hat and says, "Now we wait." And that was pretty funny. That was a funny moment.
Kraven had a few funny moments this week, actually. He was featured heavily in the Howard the Duck and Squirrel Girl crossover as well.
Well, he's just endlessly hilarious. I mean, Kate Beaton's Kraven story from Strange Adventures is one of my all-time favorite Spider-Man stories.
Amazing. Another tie-in to Standoff, which is almost the complete opposite of Captain America, is the New Avengers. Has very, very vague tie-ins to the Standoff event. These guys don't actually go to Pleasant Hill at any point. That's what a good comic should do when it's tying in. It should further the overall arch of the run while tying into the event if it can.
Yeah, we don't want another issue where they just retell the same issue from a different perspective. Yeah,
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. dropped forever.
Massively annoying.
I really like this new Avengers team, and I really like Al Ewing. I didn't realize how much I like him as a writer.
Yeah, he's really funny. I think he can do some... I mean, he's one of those sort of stable Marvel writers who just seems to get called in... to fill in. But I think he's consistently really fun, and I really liked the idea of American Kaiju, this sort of character or guy gamma radiated by the American army into a huge sort of Godzilla type creature, but with a big American flag on his chest, who can only say USA, which I thought was pretty funny.
And then so Sunspot and his team create like a Voltron robot to fight the Godzilla monster.
Yeah, I mean, this is like a Marvel superhero comic in a very loose kind of way. Like Hawkeye's in it, but also it's just a big like mecha fight, which was really good fun.
Yeah, super fun. Yeah, really, really. It's also drawn by Marcus Tu, who drew Joyride that we talked about earlier. So if you wanted to see his art and read a better story, this is the issue to get.
Yeah, and his art is really nice in this, and I really enjoy it.
Definitely. Songbird would have to be one of those Marvel characters that I every time she shows up, I'm like, what do you do again? What?
Yeah, who is she? She's like...
I remember she was in Thunderbolts. That was... But was she? Maybe I'm thinking of
someone
else.
Oh, I have no idea.
Maybe that was Moon something.
I'm like, she's like Flamebird. She's like the Marvel version of Flamebird, right?
If,
all these obscure characters yeah. that no one cares about.
If you have some incredible insight on Songbird for us, let us know.
There's got to be someone out there who's like, Songbird's my favorite character of all time.
If this person is you, hit us up. seriousissues@kingscomics.com. We would love to hear from you. Let's talk about The Mighty Thor, issue 6 by Jason Aaron with regular artist Russell Dolderman taking a back seat, doing a little bit of the intro to this comic, but the most of it being done... as like a Viking epic illustrated by Rafa Gares. So this one's called The Strongest Viking There Is. It's a new arc. And if you have been crying yourself to sleep every night because the Thor is female now, just craving for the Odinson to come back, you get a whole bunch of young male Thor, pre-worthy. So he's got the Yarnborn axe. Battling through Viking after Viking after Viking.
And if there is, like, Jason Aaron is doing such incredible work on Thor. Like, I really need to sit down and reread his entire Thor run
from
the beginning.
I can't wait to do that, yeah.
Because that, like, it's been so much fun. And if there is one thing that he writes really, really, really well, it's, like, young, arrogant Thor.
Definitely.
And I love getting a chance to read that. So it's always really good fun when you get a bit of a flashback issue.
Yeah, he writes great drunk characters.
Yeah.
like no one else.
Yep, yeah, absolutely.
Suggests that he's probably a great drunk character himself. But I recently read everything Jason Aaron's ever written in general and for Marvel in particular. And the beginnings of the stuff, like a lot of people don't like his Wolverine stuff. I really loved where it ended up, but it is like the Weapon X stuff that he did originally isn't amazing. And then he did like a pretty weird run on the Hulk. I really like his Ghost Rider stuff, but and obviously Wolverine the X-Men
is
just a
excellent
classic run. But this in particular, The Mighty Thor, it's the best superhero stuff he's ever done.
I would agree with that.
And will be hopefully go down as one of the best Thor runs, if not the best Thor run of all time.
Ooh, big call.
Yeah. Should about Ant-Man?
Yeah, why not?
So the Astonishing Ant-Man, Scott Lang's comic written by Nick Spencer.
Another comic by Nick Spencer. How many comics, monthly superhero comics, is Nick Spencer writing at the moment? Because
he's on the double shipping of two comics, is mm-hmm. it? So, yeah.
He's writing Captain America, he's writing Ant-Man. And
the
sure
standoff event.
Else.
Yeah. And then he's got The Fix coming out too on Image.
Mm.
Listen to last week's episode if you want to hear us gush about that, because it's a damn good comic. Ant-Man, I haven't read any of the run that Nick Spencer's done on Ant-Man. This is the first one. I read the number one when it came out before Secret Wars.
Mm.
So, but, you know, this is another well-written comic where they explain everything really well. I mean, Marvel generally do a really good job of telling you everything that's happened so far without, you know, holding
yeah.
your hand the entire way.
This isn't a comic that's impossible to jump in at issue 7 and have no idea what's going on. So that's nice.
Yeah. This is just notable in that, yeah, like Nick Spencer, obviously, with his Captain America stuff, is very anti-corporation, and he seems to be pushing that agenda in this book too, which I'm fine with. It's very interesting. And I will say, Nick Spencer, I mean, we talked about teen language in books sometimes being, you know, we read a terrible one earlier.
Mm.
But Nick Spencer does very good young people dialogue.
Yeah, he does. Sometimes I feel like his work might date a little bit because he does, like, all the sort of anti-big business, anti-corporation stuff comes out in a very, like, look at this app for henchmen and that kind of stuff.
I think apps will be around forever, though. I think it's a clever bit.
But, so the basic story in Ant-Man at the moment is that Ant-Man has moved to
Miami.
Miami. and is, or does he just visit Miami in this issue? Anyway, but he's a small business owner now, and he's trying to just make ends meet and look after his daughter, but he's had to keep away from his daughter, Cassie, for a while because he didn't want to get her hurt by a supervillain that he was going up against, and now Cassie's decided to take it into her own hands and has become a henchman for this aforementioned evil person app called Hench.
So I haven't seen... Cassie's not really in this issue.
No.
But has she featured prominently in the previous issues of Ant-Man?
I'm going to be honest. I've picked up fairly intermittent issues of this, so I'm not 100% sure. But it's been pretty good fun.
Yeah, cause Cassie Lang is a great Marvel character.
Yeah. Yeah, I do love Cassie Lang. I was glad when they brought her back under mysterious circumstances.
Definitely. But also, though, her death... in the Young Avengers Children's Crusade was one of those like totally tragic moments, but like it felt like a good beat. It wasn't like super just tacked on.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's one of the problems I have with this Ant-Man run is, and this is like a thing in superhero comics that you just kind of deal with, is that this is such a different characterization of Scott Lang to what we saw in the Fantastic the FF arc,
right,
drawn by Mike Allred, who written by
Matt Fraction, and that ended up being drawn by Mike Allred and his brother anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And that was a much more sort of somber, oh, my daughter's just died version of the character. And I guess now that his daughter's back alive, but it's just, it is a slightly sort of...
Yeah. I guess he was trying to fill Reed... You could argue that he was trying to fill Reed Richards' shoes in that book.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why he was, you know, different personality-wise. But yeah, this is like, I think this is definitely in reaction to the Ant-Man movie, and it's a comedy book.
Yeah.
And I think because it's a comedy book, that's why a lot of Nick Spence, like the app stuff, it's so mired in comedy, like that. I think it works. If this thing doesn't work for you, you can just play it off as a joke.
Yeah.
And I think that's why a lot of Nick Spence's ideas work, because he's a genuinely funny writer. Yeah, I'm looking forward to catching up on the Ant-Man stuff, though. This comic was enough for me to realize that I should be reading this month to month.
Yeah, it's definitely worth picking up.
Or fortnight to fortnight, as Marvel Comics come out.
It's too much.
just quickly, Captain Marvel. This is the fourth issue of the new run written by Michelle Fazekas and Tara Butters, who wrote on the Agent Carter TV show, and drawn by Chris Anker and Philippe Smith. This book should be really good. The writers are clearly talented. The art's fantastic. I like Captain Marvel, and it's pretty much her leading an Alpha Flight team, and any comic with Puck in it is great.
Should be really good fun.
The thing with this is it's four issues in, and heaps of shit's happened, but I don't feel like the story is moved in any way at all. So this is a pretty disappointing run, and I'm looking forward to this first arc being over for me to actually judge it properly. I think, you know, it's okay to kind of... You can forgive a kind of boring first arc if they do something exciting immediately after it. So hopefully we're only an issue or two away from that.
Yeah, Captain Marvel's one of those characters that I really want to care about. And I really want, like, you know, I'm all behind them making a Captain Marvel movie and all that jazz. But I just don't care. I almost kind of hope that the movie... when it eventually does come out, if it does come out, gives her a stronger sort of characterization, because I feel like that's something that's missing. Like, I just don't... Like, she's a soldier and she has a cat and, like, that's...
Yeah, you're
that's
right. There isn't anything but there's not, yeah, you're right.
I feel like she's not distinct enough.
She's used to great effect in Spider-Woman.
Yeah.
In the Spider-Woman book that we've been raving about in the past. I think she's a great character in that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think she's a good addition to team books. But I'm yet to read a Captain Marvel standalone story that I was like, ah, sick. That was amazing.
I think this could potentially get there, but at the moment it's lacking.
Yeah.
You forgot to read Silk this week.
I did forget to read Silk, which I'm really upset about. That was really good.
So I won't spoil it for you. So at the moment they're doing Spider-Women, which is a team-up book between Spider-Woman... Silk and Gwen, Spider-Gwen, but they're all stuck in Spider-Gwen's dimension, so there's lots of funny alternate versions. last week, I didn't really like that issue of Spider-Gwen so much, but I really like Silk. This comic book's really great.
Silk is such a good character, like Cindy, whatever her name is. I really love her as an addition to the Spider-Man universe and the Marvel universe. She's really funny. Like, I think that's a better example of like a really... distinct, well-characterized female superhero, you know?
Yeah. So she finds out that her counterpart on this universe is evil.
Awesome.
And breaks into that lair, and it's very fun. It's just really, really fun. And this is a really fun little event. Normally the events that kind of force you to read other books can be a bit tiresome, but this has got good energy about it. I like it.
I agree. One that I read that I know you didn't was I picked up the final issue in Jeff Lemire and Ramon Perez's All New Hawkeye series, which is sort of telling a story about both Hawkeyes. So Clint Barton and also Kate Bishop, and they just both go by Hawkeye. And this is kind of just tying up their run. So in this story, it's been really cool. They've been like really nice flashbacks telling the history of both Hawkeyes, and also then flashing forward to the future when, you know, there's an ongoing story about them helping some mutant children, which is very nice and sweet. And I think this is another one of those comics that does sort of, it's hard to write a Hawkeye comic, especially when you have a version of the character that's so similar to the brilliant Matt Fraction and David Ayer run. So I think it suffers a little bit from that comparison.
Yeah, it's strange that they, like, I don't know, I feel like you either continue that run with a different writer doing the same thing, or you just kind of leave Hawkeye alone for a while.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's probably what they should have done, or just focused on Kate.
Yes,
I think that we could see a really Bishop awesome Kate sure. Bishop Hawkeye comic, and I kind of hope that that's where this goes from here. And they just leave Clint alone for a little while.
Yeah.
So it was a decent story, but just not as good as the Matt Fraction stuff. If you want a really good Hawkeye story, that's what I would recommend picking up.
Yeah, I mean, like, Matt Fraction decided to depict Hawkeye as a bit of a fuck-up.
Yeah, it was a very, like, different version of the character, I suppose.
But you can only read so many issues of that without him redeeming himself in some way.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I read Spider-Man Deadpool, and I am very confident in saying that you didn't.
Boo, no way.
But you know why you should read it, though, is because you love Ed McGuinness.
Oh, I do love Ed McGuinness.
Drawing chunky, shirtless Spider-Man Deadpool. It's a very blokey comic. It's written by Joe Kelly, who is famous for writing a lot of the Deadpool and Cable stuff in the 90s. I bought the first issue of this when it came out, and was actually quite surprised at how much I liked it, especially how much, because, you know, there's a Joker panel in this, which can get tiresome, but a lot of them land. Joe Kelly is a funny writer. It's getting tiring now, but they've started to bring in other characters. So, like, Thor is in this one, and Deadpool arranges a double date because he had
that's what someone was referring to. Apologies for not understanding your comment better, person who commented on the King's Instagram account. That went over my head.
Right.
Someone referenced Thor going on a date, and I was like, what? What are you talking about? I'm not responding to that.
Well, now you can, and they'll be none the wiser. Deadpool and his wife have got, like, an arrangement. So, you know, obviously there are, you know, five girls that Deadpool can sleep with.
Oh, is Deadpool, like, as in Deadpool's wife from the movie? Is that, like...
No, she's like a mystical kind of...
But Deadpool has a wife.
Yeah, Deadpool got married in the
I'm very out
last
of the
year,
loop.
the main Deadpool comic.
Oh.
But reveals that he has a list of people that he's allowed to date or sleep with that as a one-off for his...
Nice.
His wife's allowed it,
like that.
Yeah, like a free pass list, and one of them is set. Like it said, like number one, Hillary Clinton, if president, won't happen. Number two, Thor, if he ever becomes a girl. So there's some goofy setups like that, and obviously, like Thor, it does not want to date or sleep with Deadpool, and finds the whole thing quite sexist. So she makes Spider-Man, and then it was revealed that Deadpool set the whole thing up so that Thor and another kind of elf character would mud wrestle. When they revealed that very sexist plan, they then decided to redeem themselves. Spider-Man and Deadpool have to, like, do a dance for the girls in their underwear.
Well, that does sound like the kind of comic I do want to read.
Yeah. So, I don't know. If you want a really, really... But the overarching plot of this is that Deadpool loves Spider-Man. Like, just thinks he's the greatest person in the universe, wants to be his best friend. Spider-Man doesn't trust Deadpool because Deadpool kills people. But even though Captain America has vouched for him to be in the Avengers, he still doesn't trust him. So Deadpool's constantly annoying Spider-Man, trying to be his best mate and prove himself to him as a good person. But also, Deadpool is taking a contract out to kill Peter Parker.
Hilarious.
Yep. Antics. At the end of this issue, he seemingly does.
Ooh.
So, RIP Pete Parker, everyone. Spider-Man's dead.
Once more, Peter Parker's dead.
Bring back
Doc Ock.
If you really liked the Deadpool movie, this is definitely the closest. Jerry Duggan's Deadpool run is apparently fantastic, too. I should read more of it, because I read the first arc. I didn't love it too much, but apparently it got much better. And it was co-written by Brian Posehn, who showed up in King's Comics the other day. Tell us about that, Siobhan.
That was very nice. He came into the store just visiting because he is doing a stand-up tour at the moment. He seemed busy, so I just said, "Excuse me, Brian, I'm a big fan. Could I please have a photo?" And he said yes very kindly, and then that was it. I was like, I just didn't want to bother him. And then Matt from King's actually went to his show and went and spoke to him afterwards, and he was like, I really wanted to sign some comics, but I didn't want to, like, presume. And I was like, so that was a lesson, important life lesson for me to be pushier. So thank you, Brian, for saying.
And the truly tragic thing is that he arrived about an hour after I left, after we recorded last week's episode.
Yeah.
So we could have got him on in the next future. Time. I'll just never leave King's Comics from this point forward in case stand-up comedians show up.
That's the lesson that we've learned here.
Definitely. Power Man and Iron Fist, another funny Marvel comic.
Yeah, I enjoyed this actually more than I enjoyed issue two. I'm back on board.
David Walker and Sanford Green on writing and art. Again, another goofy bro comic.
Mm-hmm.
Look, we do sing the praises of a lot of Marvel's female comics, but there are a lot of dude comics as well.
Yeah.
This is definitely a dude team-up. You know, Jessica Jones is obviously in it too, and other characters. I'm very surprised they haven't done a Jessica Jones
comic.
I don't know what they would do with her, because obviously the Jessica Jones in the Marvel Universe now is completely different to Jessica Jones in on the Netflix series. Mainly because she has a kid.
Series.
That's true.
That'd be cool.
But then what ground would you cover that wasn't already covered in the Alias run?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah. In any case, it's just a very, very fun, silly comic.
Mm. I like the implication that there's all these other kinds of magic that, you know, mainstream Marvel magic heroes like Doctor Strange don't know about because they're white.
Yeah.
And there's all these like
street magic
and all that kind of stuff that they don't know about. It was really good fun.
And art on this, Sanford Green is so good.
Yeah. Yep.
He has his own thing going on. You've never seen the characters drawn like this. And, you know, when he gets weird, and he's held back for the most part now, but occasionally you see him getting weird. I really hope this goes in a very crazy, mystical way.
It definitely seems like that. Like, as the bad guys, so there's two female bad guys here, and one of them's been sort of, you know, is abusing some magic power, and so is now losing her form, and it's getting wackier and wackier, and she's turning into a crazy dinosaur lady, which is cool. I think one of my favorite ongoing visual gags in this is the fact that Iron Fist is constantly in full costume.
Yep.
And Luke Cage is like, "I am wearing a V-neck T-shirt," and that is it.
Yeah, it's a fun book. I hope it just kind of continues. I don't think the, you know, Luke Cage being reluctant to be a superhero thing would get old.
It's really funny. It's funny that he just keeps being accidentally forced into these sort of superhero capers.
But I love their family dynamic. Like, I would read a comic where they just had dinner and had a discussion over a dinner table.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like reminisced about stuff. Like, that's an entertaining comic to me. You know what else was an entertaining comic this week, Siobhan?
What was it?
Another Warren Ellis book, Karnak, the third issue of... it's a bit of a troubled run. I think they had that.
Yeah, it's been 6 months since the last issue came out?
And it's revealed that it was the artists. Well, they don't outright say that, but so Gerardo Zaffino did the art on one and most of two. But he was so amazing on our first two issues, but unfortunately had to step away due to personal reasons. So that's why this book has been so sporadic. We've now got... Roland Boschi, who did some New Avengers stuff last year, I think.
Okay. I'm not familiar with him.
But he's perfect fit for this book.
Absolutely. Like, it's definitely different, but it fits in really nicely, I think, with the tone of the book.
So, Karnak is an Inhuman who never was exposed to Terrigen Mists, but he has the power to see the flaw in all things. The flaw, F-A-W. AW, not like the floor, FLOOR.
It's like,
because everyone can see the floor.
Yeah.
It's not a very good superpower. And this is a very like dark, gritty, but still quite funny comic. Phil Coulson is kind of taking Karnak on a, like a, around the world to kind of track down and try and find this kidnapped Inhuman.
And Karnak, Karnak has left the sort of Inhuman, Inhuman group. He's no longer associated with the Inhumans for some reason. He's some kind of mystical monk of the dead.
Yeah,
and he just spouts philosophy the whole way through.
Exactly, and he's not like a murk or anything like that. He's just, yeah, he just is Karnak. And,
yeah, and it's so
he's doing
good.
This job because they are paying him heaps.
Yeah.
But he's really, really rude to Coulson, which is great because Coulson is the worst character in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. now.
I was so glad when he died in Avengers.
Oh, he was so good in Avengers, but yeah. And he has moments of greatness in the TV show, but blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it's good to see him, someone being horrible to him. this is just like, you know, they're not afraid to kill heaps of people in this book. Mm-hmm. And I think that works for the story. Obviously, Warren Ellis is having a lot of fun with it. This will definitely, I'm sure this only has another 3 issues or something left of it.
Yeah, I'm sure. It definitely feels like a good little self-contained story. It's like, I love it when there's a bit of a kind of cross-genre thing. Like, you can, like, this is almost like a horror comic, you
definitely.
Know? And it definitely has sort of Twilight Zone kind of vibes, I think.
Yeah. If you really enjoyed Warren Ellis's Moon Knight run last year or his Secret Avengers run a couple years ago, both, you know, 6 issues and done, stuff that he did among some of the best superhero comics, best Marvel comics of the last decade, you should definitely pick up Karnak, even 100%. If you're not familiar with the character or Inhumans at all. It's a really fun and easy to get into book.
Yeah, and it really doesn't matter if you have never heard of him before, because this is a really weird version of the character.
Uncanny Inhumans number 7. I was not reading this at all, and then in the last week, I read a lot of comics in the last week. I know it goes without saying, but we are professional comic book readers after all. Uncanny Inhumans, the first run started, obviously written by Charles Soule. In the past, I have said I have not enjoyed his Marvel stuff beyond She-Hulk and the Lando comic. I love Uncanny Inhumans.
I think he's consistent, like really surprisingly so, considering how many books he's usually writing.
I just can't get over how epic and fun this is.
So there are a couple of Inhumans books out at the moment, and I am confused as to which this one is. I'm reading All New Inhumans, which is the one with Crystal being a sort of ambassador for the Inhumans and flying around the globe. But so what's going on in Uncanny Inhumans?
Well, so this is about like the main Inhumans family, I guess. So it's Black Bolt and Uhura, his son, with and you also are. You have little glimpses to the relationship between the Human Torch, Johnny, and Medusa, Black Bolt's now ex-wife.
Because he used to be married to Crystal.
Yes, which is fucked up in its own way.
That's awkward.
I guess a lot of these Inhumans were introduced in the Inhuman stories that Charles Soule wrote last year. There's a guy, Reader, who's blind but has a dog that he can get the... He can use his eyes. Sometimes he gets like 3 reads. He's a very hard superhero to explain, but he's very cool.
Some of the new Inhumans are weird,
which I think is great. I love that Inhumans are just weird. Like, whereas you know, mutants are quite easy to explain for the most part.
Yeah.
But Inhumans all have bizarre powers.
Yeah.
I mean, like it's a Black Bolt comic, basically. I love Black Bolt. I think he's one of Marvel's coolest creations, and just so strange. You know, I mean, how do you write a comic featuring a character that can't talk?
Yeah.
Also, because if he does, he'll blow everything up. But
just, I think the Inhumans have some of the best costumes
in all of
superhero comics.
They're so
just
flamboyant.
The classic Jack Kirby designs, like Black Bolt's weird little tuning fork thing on his head, just so good.
Yeah. So the first few issues of this run it's a big time-spanning epic involving Kang, one of the greatest Marvel villains of all time.
Is this the one where Kang has stolen
Uhura? Yep.
I have read some of this.
So once that's been wrapped up, we now are in the Quiet Room, which is a nightclub in New York that Black Bolt owns.
Obviously, Black Bolt has time to run a nightclub.
It's a very different, like, in the theme's just completely different now. So it was like, you know, a desperate epic in to get the sun back in the first few issues. And now it's like, again, quite a humorous look at superheroes and villains in the same, you know, like the quiet room is like a safe space where, you know, people can come together. So like you have like the thinker and the leader
awesome.
Gambling together over who's the smartest. And like, you know, obviously shit hits the fan with a lot of different things, but yeah, there's a mystery and look, it's a mystery comic in a nightclub owned by a superhero who can't talk.
If that doesn't sell you, I don't know what will.
Yeah, and it also has a lot of again, there's a tech subplot as well.
Excellent.
Black Bolt has invited the minions of one of his old enemies to start doing business with him in the quiet room, and Uhura puts a proposal to be their leader.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, and it's all about business and like, yeah, it's just great. And like, you know, Black Bolt doesn't say one word in this entire comic, but who's on art on this one? Brandon Peterson does just incredible facial work, so you awesome. Obviously can phase a lot of emotion.
Is Medusa in this? Because they are now separated.
Are separated. So we catch up on a Medusa and Johnny next issue. Want to know what happens next?
Oh, yeah, is she dating Johnny now?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. God, comic books are so weird.
Yeah, they are. That's why I read them all, because they're the best. final Marvel book I read this week was Howard the Duck number 6, which is the second crossover issue with Squirrel Girl, Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, written by Chip Zdarsky, Ryan North, with art by Joe Quinones. Just a really fun, goofy... fun romp with Kraven the Hunter, and Rocket Raccoon is for some reason in like almost every issue of this comic, which is fine. They have a good dynamic together, but like also every single so I caught up on all this in the last actually all today on a flight from Adelaide, and every single issue of Howard the Duck, Howard gets kidnapped.
Hilarious.
Kind of. I kind of hope now Zdarsky does something different with the story, but it's a great universe. He has great relationships with different characters, and I think a lot of old fans of Howard the Duck don't like the portrayal that he gets now. He's not like, you know, a womanizing smartass. He's just kind of like a down on his luck detective. But I think it really works. And what's great about this crossover is that in the bottom of each page in Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, Ryan North has little like subtext. Just like finding little jokes that he writes beneath all the panels.
Yeah, Ryan North is one of those people that you feel like you could read his comics 1,000 times and find new jokes because they're hidden everywhere.
Definitely. So in this one, you have, instead of just one of them making a joke down the bottom, they have a little conversation.
Oh, awesome.
So you have like a line from Chip and then a line from Ryan. It's just, you know, another level, another reason. If you like humor comics and
it's got to be said that Joe Quinones is like one of the best at like funny comics ever.
But he's also like, he would be great on any book. He's such so an amazing brilliant. Artist.
Facial expressions are like he does some of the funniest like reaction shots and things like that, I think.
Yeah. But I think, you know, he'd be great on an Avengers book as well. Yeah. Like, yeah. I hope it doesn't lose him to this. There's a really great moment in this where Howard the Duck steals a costume from a cosplayer who's taken things as far as she can to the point where she wants to hunt Howard the Duck with superhero modified toys that she's got.
Awesome.
But he thwarts her by dressing in another costume that she has. So she has like a costume that's like, you know, Captain America's shield with Iron Man's hand and Scarlet Witch's boots and a Hulk fist and Cyclops' visor.
Awesome.
But then Howard the Duck finds another outfit, which is Batman's helmet, Birdman's mace, Wonder Woman's lasso, Superman.
Birdman. Hawkman.
Hawkman, sorry. Yeah, you're right. Sorry, I've been watching Harvey Birdman.
Right.
A Green Lantern ring, so it's very funny.
Oh, that's really funny.
Yeah. And at the bottom, the subtext on that is Chip saying, "Very cool outfit that is in no way legally an issue." It's great.
Nice.
You know what we forgot to talk about?
What did we forget to talk about?
Image. Well, actually, it wasn't actually Image. It was through Brian K. Vaughan and Marcus Martin.
All right.
Wrote the first ever Walking Dead story that wasn't written by Robert Kirkman.
Which is a pretty big deal. I mean, Walking Dead's been written for over 10 years now,
yeah,
consistently, which is pretty nuts.
So it's called Walking Dead the Alien, and it's available through Brian K. Vaughan's what's it called again?
It's called Panel Syndicate.
Panel Syndicate, yeah.
So that's where he's been publishing some of his creator-owned works, like Private Eye.
That's right.
And this came about through a deal he did with Image, where, you know, Image agreed to print Private Eye in a physical book if Brian K. Vaughan would come over and write the Walking Dead issue.
But this is only available through Brian K. Vaughan's digital site, the digital-only comic. It probably will get a physical release at some point.
You have to assume so.
What's crazy is you see Marcus Martin, who we're very used to seeing in, like, you know, very colourful Marvel. Mm. He did the She-Hulk run. Is that Marcus Martin?
No, that was Javier
Pulido. Oh, you're right. Well, yeah, he's done very
colourful. But similar style.
But because this is a Walking Dead issue, it's black and white. If you're a Walking Dead fan... And you should be a fan of the comic. I don't think you should be a fan of the TV show, but that's just me. In fact, the TV show, the little I've seen of it, makes you forget how good of a comic The Walking Dead still is.
Yeah.
I caught up with everything recently, and I'm like, I can't believe this is still such an incredible comic.
Robert Kirkman is one of those people who, like, just, like, low-key will keep something going for so long. Like, he is still writing Invincible, and I'm pretty sure he's the only person who's ever written Invincible. And people who still read Invincible say it's, like...
The best it's ever been. Yeah. I need to catch up. So The Walking Dead, The Alien, is set in Spain. Same thing, zombie outbreak, only this time, one of the characters wears like a suit of armor.
That does sound cool.
Cause she works in a museum. It's a really, really great story. And, in the end, I won't spoil it, but it does tie into the regular series. And I think it's really successful. It's actually, you know, for a one shot, it's very successful in that you wish it was a longer series, but I also hope it just stays this way. And if it's just done like this, I don't know. It's really, really great. If you're a fan of Walking Dead or just a fan of just a good comic, go to, the panel syndicate.
Yeah. I believe that's what's
.com and pick this up, for a price that you would like to pay for it.
That's the coolest thing.
I paid $2.
Oh, that's very nice.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a reasonable amount to pay
for a digital comic.
Yeah.
Was I wrong? Let me know. SeriousIssues@kingsandcomics.com. That is all the issues that we read this week.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, there's some incredible comics coming out. We've got the fourth chapter of the latest Dark Knight 3 comic.
Which I've been enjoying more than I would like to.
Yeah, and to the point where I was like, I might go read Dark Knight Returns 2, which I have like on Comixology. I've never actually read it. And everyone shits all over that book. It's actually not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. I think that people shit all over it because Dark Knight Returns was so good.
Yeah,
and then
totally.
Dark Knight Strikes Again isn't. It's crazy. It's not as good.
It's a very, very insane book. The art is pretty crap.
Yes.
But I like the story behind it.
Mm, I haven't read them in a long time.
But yeah, I'm enjoying that a lot. We've got the final issue of this installation of Saga.
Awesome.
I hate it when they do the little hiatus, but they need to do it. So Fiona Staples can make that art as good as it is. We got the return of Sex Criminals after a while.
Oh, goodness.
The finale of Standoff with the Avengers. Doctor Strange's Last Days of Magic event kicks off.
Oh, yeah.
We're tying into it. I think that ties into like the Scarlet Witch books and something else, I'm sure. And most excitingly, Strawberry Shortcake finally gets her own comic.
What do you mean finally? They brought out a Strawberry Shortcake series a couple of years ago, which was Scratch and Sniff.
Oh, wow.
So, I'm looking forward to smelling.
Maybe we'll do a smelly podcast next week. but before we go, tell me about Free Comic Book Day, Siobhan.
So, Free Comic Book Day is coming up. Free Comic Book Day, if you don't know, is an event that's held every single year where it's basically just a big celebration of comic books. All the major publishers send around free issues to your local comic book store. So if you're not in Sydney, check out where around you is doing it. At King's, it's very exciting because it's also our 30th anniversary this year. So we're having a really big event on the first Saturday in May. So May 7th, put it in your diaries. We will have a big cosplay competition. We're having prizes for both groups, individuals, and also kids. There's going to be face painting, a coloring in table. We've got Nicola Scott doing a signing. Which is huge. God, I love Nicola. She's not doing sketches, unfortunately, but she will be signing and selling prints. We've got Dean Rankin, who is a artist on The Simpsons. He's going to be doing Simpsonized version of you sketches for free, which is pretty huge. Keep up on the King's Comics Facebook page if you want to get a place for that, because we're going to be posting more news about that soon.
What's that link?
King's Comics, well, the Facebook page is just King's Comics. I don't think we have like a proper good link for it. Or you can also check out kingscomics.com, where we'll hopefully have some of the information up about that. Yeah, it's going to be huge this year. We've got a lot going on.
Amazing. The most important thing is you get free comics.
You get free comic books. Yeah. You get free actual, no strings attached, free comic books. You will have to line up. There is no, unfortunately, the line.
In the past, I've done, one year I went to every single comic book shop in Sydney.
Wow.
On free comic book day. And managed to get my hands on every single free comic they were giving away that year.
This year is 50 free comics, which is the biggest it's ever been. That's pretty insane. Huge.
But King's Comics always has the most people.
Yeah. And we're trying to make it so that the line is good fun this year. So we'll have some various entertainment and stuff going on down the line.
Perfect. We'll be doing a guide to our picks for the best comics of Free Comic Book Day too. If you're curious of what you should be picking up, there's always some good stuff in there.
Yeah. We're also having a sale. It's our semi-annual 20% off sale, 50% off back issues, which is really good. We are running a competition at the moment for the King's Golden Ticket. So if you upload a picture of yourself from a previous Free Comic Book Day King's line with the hashtag King's Golden Ticket, you could go in the running to win one of these tickets, which pushes you straight to the front of this year's line, and we give you a full set of all 50 free comic books.
Well, that's way easier than going to every single comic book.
Yeah, so just upload a picture, hashtag King's Golden Tickets on Instagram or Facebook to go on the running, and that'd be a prize that I would want to win.
Definitely. All right, well, that's sick. Can't wait for May 7th, Free Comic Book Day. Of course, we'll be doing our guide episode, and we'll go over that information again and give you the picks of what you should be looking out for. We'll be back next week with reviews of all the new comics, and I'm going to send Siobhan home with Patience, a fairly recent new book by Dan Klaus.
Great.
On Fantagraphics, which is one of the best things I've read in a long while. We'll do a review of that next week too. If you want to get in touch with us and ask us a question, you can find us online at facebook.com/seriousissuespodcast, or you can send us an email to seriousissues@kingscomics.com. Seriously, we would love to hear from you. Thanks to everybody that's gotten in touch with us so far. It's always nice to kind of get recommendations, or people have been asked. Someone actually asked us this week to review Superman American Alien. Yeah, that was recommended by Richard. So thanks so much to Richard for recommending we check out American Alien. I'm very glad I did. Mm. He said that he also read The Vision after our very, very positive review of it, and is loving it as much as we are.
You should all be reading it.
Pretty awesome. if you like what you hear on the show, please leave us a nice review on the iTunes store so more people can tune in each week. Siobhan can be found on Instagram as SiobhanCBG, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram as LevDog. We'll be back next week with another episode of Serious Issues. Read heaps of comics. That is the only thing you need to do until then.
Thanks, guys.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.